Kia ora whanau. Hey, nice to see you all. And just to add my welcome to Aaron's, if you're new or newer amongst us, it's great to have you with us. And my family, we have this little, you know how families have these stories that keep on getting retold and embellished. So Aaron's up here with the tea, and I'm like, and just this memory just floods back that I regularly reminded of by my family about tea making. So I thought I might just share that with you. Had not planned to, but when I was at high school, we had a special end of year event, as you do. And anyway, our local MP, anyone guess who might that it might have been? You have to work out how old I am and where I lived and who that might have been. Helen Clark came along to this event. Anyway, I was tasked with welcoming her, opening the door and helping her out and making her a cup of tea. So, I was 18 and absolutely useless around the house. My mother was far, far, far too caring and did, too much. Anyway, so the story goes that that was the day that I learnt to make a cup of tea, and poor Helen Clark. You know, I'm sure I did a good job. Yeah, I reckon I, knew. Anyway, okay, so that wasn't that funny. So can you remember, back two Sundays ago, Leanne made us wait for 5 whole minutes. You remember that? The start of our worship together? I wonder how that was for you. We were thinking that week about how the disciples were told to wait for God's Spirit. There's something about that waiting and that listening that, though difficult for some of us, is so good for us. Remember how as and after Jesus' disciples waited, that they were told they'd be witnesses for Jesus in the city they were in Jerusalem, but also in their country in Judea, in Badlands Samaria, where their half-Jewish siblings were, and to the ends of the world. Leanne also led us by helping us to engage in a variety of ways of praying. Prayer was and is and will be important for us as a church in seeking the mind of Christ and being led in the ways of Jesus, ways known and yet to be made known, waiting and transforming us and the life of the church back then and for us today. Then last week, David led us in thinking something about feet, or maybe about walking with God and where we're going. We looked at two characters with very different backgrounds. Cornelius, the man of war who was also a God-fearer with no knowledge of Jesus. And through a vision, he seeks out Peter, the Jewish disciple of Jesus. Peter was consistently being challenged in his understanding of faith in Jesus and was listening to and responding to the Holy Spirit's leading. And that led to Peter crossing those cultural lines to embrace non-Jews, like God was clearly leading them to do. Then Cornelius, he chose God's heart. So there's that choosing of God's heart and made the decision to be baptized. Peter kept choosing God's heart. And that, I think, speaks to us today about how our salvation is being continually worked out and outworked. We are saved and being saved. And this radical full embrace of non-Jews, though it seems like, no big deal to us today, very radical back then, enabled both Cornelius, his household, Peter, and the church to sit around the risen Christ's table, sharing communion, crossing of boundaries that weren't expected. And that brings us to this week, where we see the gospel spreading even further, beyond Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, to the ends of the world. Well, into Europe, at least. Those heathens, right? But the gospel, that through Jesus, by the Spirit, God is at work in making all things new. The gospel is also spreading in terms of who was included and the growing understanding of the early church that Jesus is for everyone. So in Acts chapter 16, we read about two of the church's early leaders, Paul and Silas, sensing from God to travel to Macedonia, modern-day northern Greece that we've seen, near Philippi. And on the Jewish special day of worship, they go where they thought there might be a gathering of people to pray. And that's where they meet Lydia. Okay, Lydia, who was obviously open to God through some Jewish connection, but she's not a Jew. She's a high-end trade and retail business owner and successful at it. Fun fact, the dye, apparently, to make things purple, was sourced through a special type of shellfish. So when she hears about Jesus for the first time, she responds immediately and wholeheartedly and generously and invites Paul and Silas to stay with her family for a cup of tea, or for a period of time. She's the first European that we know of to accept Jesus as Lord. And her response is one that reflects the heart of God towards all people, because she offers hospitality and generosity. That's the key thing for today. And I guess this response, to be honest, like, really challenges me deeply, because I love the idea of really opening my home to people at dropping in or for a drink or for a meal or to stay overnight. But I also really struggle with that as well, due to my own sense of busyness. You know, can I make it? Can I fit it in? Which is, you know, really slack. But also fear as well that my house isn't tidy enough or clean enough, even though it probably is, or enough. You know, and Lydia's story invites us to consider, I think, you know, what is my first response to a situation? Is it one of generosity and hospitality, like what Lydia's was? And it makes me wonder, like, how have we experienced hospitality? And what impact has that had on us? Have we experienced hospitality, and what impact has that had on us? In a couple of weeks' time, I've got the guy that really took me under his wing, who's a mentor when I got involved in church leadership for the first time. He's been living in the UK for the last 22 years. They're coming to stay in a couple of weeks. Yeah, so that'll be interesting. Yeah. And I'm feeling like, about it. But I don't need to. Anyway, so from Lydia's home as a base, Paul and Silas go about meeting people, talking about Jesus. But there's been this annoying person following them around, though. A girl trapped as a slave with the ability to tell the future, and whose slave owners made money from her doing this. Paul sets her free, and this gets him and Silas into big trouble with the locals. Without even a trial to see if they were guilty of doing anything wrong, they get stripped, beaten badly with whips, and then thrown into the very central part of the jail, the local jail, with chains around their ankles tied to large blocks of wood. What an awful, desperate situation to be in. I can't imagine. It's the sort of stuff that we read about in some extreme faraway places, isn't it? But what gets me with this is that Paul and Silas still have their minds on Christ in this situation and choose to be attentive to God, and they choose to worship God in that. They pray. They sing. And what about our most desperate times, or times that we are struggling, perhaps where work is really stressful? Or when our family is in conflict. Or when finances are really tight. Or when the future is really unsure. What a difference it can make to respond a little bit like how Paul and Silas do. To pause. To turn our hearts, our attention towards God in the midst of all that's going around us. To turn towards God in prayer. Maybe even, you know, if it helps, you know, some people find this really helpful, to pop on some worshipful music. Or simply to remind ourselves that God is God. To focus on gratitude. And on who God is and who God has called us to be and what God has called us to do. And to wait. And to pray. To get a sense of how God wants us to be in this situation that we find ourselves in. To affirm, probably for our own benefit, our trust in God. How we handle those awful situations There's ways that we can work through those, eh? Not that it always ends in an earthquake. But back to Paul and Silas in jail praying, God acts in that. The jail is shaken. The cell doors are released. The chains fall off. The prisoners had been listening to Paul and Silas talk about and sing about and pray to God, and no doubt recognizing this was God at work, they stay put. The jailer goes a step further, asking, "What must I do to be saved?" Have faith in Jesus is the answer. Faith implying belief and action. That's it. No extras. And the jailer gets it. He takes them to a place where he could wash their cuts and bruises. He shares with his family, and they believe. And they respond with baptism to mark this choosing of God and the ways of Jesus. And then in verse 34, after this, the jailer took Paul and Silas to his home and gave them something to eat. Imagine that. That would have been unthinkable a few hours ago, right? Yet God's heart was beating with the jailer's heart, and the result was an instant embrace of God's hospitality and generosity of God's heart. Hospitality here is also wrapped up in wrapping wounds. There can be a practical non-teapot sort of caring as well, the sharing of what we have to meet needs. And I wonder what they talked about as they ate together in this non-Jewish home, where just a short time ago there was such a huge power imbalance. There was would have been assumptions of criminal activity and probably physical mistreatment. Being in people's homes breaks down walls, though, doesn't it? I think of what Aaron shared with that cup of tea, and you know, there's one pot, but different cups, and people don't like it different ways, but there's that unity within that diversity. Extending and receiving hospitality can heal and deepen friendships. Simply inviting someone inside to sit down and chat, like I was this week, or inviting in for a cup of tea, or just for a biscuit, or for a simple meal. These are gifts that go well beyond the simple things they actually are. And I think hospitality is powerful and something that's been a beautiful part of our church's culture, and something I hope will continue to be so. This week's spiritual practice, as indicated in the videos, to utilize our coasters by inviting somebody in, or inviting somebody over, or taking somebody out for a coffee, or something like that. Maybe someone that you might not have before, like the jailer and Lydia, to reflect the generous and hospitable heart of God. I want to finish with this thought, that the question that can legitimately be asked, why don't we just focus on our own location, on our own local mission? Why focus on overseas stuff so far away? AJ, the leader of Arotahi, had these thoughts, and I thought I'll just share them because I think it's really helpful for me. Because absolutely, I think we should and do focus energy and resources with our neighbours. We do, don't we? But mission is also for those who are far away, to the ends of the earth. It's global and it's local. And I think we've always had a good grasp of that as a church. And throughout this Renew Together appeal, we've seen the bigness of God's heart and the spreading and inclusivity of God's good news. That God's heart is for the lame man stuck outside the temple, and the eunuch, representing those who are sexually different from the majority, who would never have been allowed in the temple. And God's heart is for the Samaritans who worshipped at another temple, and the barbarians who would never have come near a temple. All these people are being called by God. All these people are being included. And this is because of the enormous hospitality and generosity of God. And so similarly in our context, God's heart is for our local households as well. That God's heart is for the single parents and for the kids with neglectful parents and for the working poor on minimum wages, with one parent working the day and one at night. God's heart is for those new to New Zealand and for the Rainbow Community member who's helping raise support for inclusive practices in the workplace. And God's heart is for families under financial stress and for those family members who are far away. Like Peter, as God continues to transform us, we're invited to be equally hospitable and generous. And so we are invited to be generous to the work of Arotahi, to those we have long-term connection with through our Christian Baptist whānau. So I'm going to finish with some words of Jesus from Luke chapter 14. Then Jesus said to the man who had invited him, "When you give a dinner or a banquet, don't invite your friends and family and relatives and rich neighbors. If you do, they'll invite you in return and you will be paid back. When you give a feast, invite the poor, the paralyzed, the lame, and the blind. They cannot pay you back, but God will bless you and reward you with when his people rise from death." And from Matthew chapter 25, Jesus speaking, "When I was hungry, you gave me something to eat. When I was thirsty, you gave me something to drink. When I was a stranger, you welcomed me. And when I was naked, you gave me clothes to wear. When I was sick, you took care of me. And when I was in jail, you visited me."